Godspeed with Carol Hollenbeck, Sundays at 2 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome to the Godspeed Institute, an enlightening and positive forum exploring the world's religions and spiritual belief systems as an on-air classroom in an effort to help people better understand each other, promote tolerance, and foster peace. I'm your host, Carol Hollenbeck. We know the importance of food in terms of survival, in terms of deep basic connection to another human being. We utilize food in religious celebrations around the world, and we are beginning to discern better paths in terms of health. Our relationship with food is primal and lifelong, and can also be a lifelong challenge. Today we are going to explore the fascinating topic of food and spirituality with Mary Lane, a professional chef of 30 years and the author of Divine Nourishment, A Woman's Sacred Journey with Food. Mary, welcome to the program, and thank you so much for being with us today. What is nourishment?
Well, I think it is anything that feeds and sustains life-giving energy on any and all levels. You know, it promotes the continuation of life, and it strengthens that yes to life feeling within us. You know, it doesn't compromise anything or anyone by not being in the natural order of life. You know, we can be nourished by a multitude of things, you know, all in one day that doesn't even feel related. But it is. It makes us grateful to be alive. You know, it's sacred life force. It's not just about physical substance of food, and it includes food when it's aligned with this principle. You know, it's we're nourished by many things. You know, our both our body and our souls need nourishment. So it's anything that just makes us, that affirms life, basically.
And as you said, food is part of that.
Food is definitely a part of that, yes.
Now, what form, and you can speak as broadly as you like, what form does nourishment take in our culture today?
Well, for some, it is what I, you know, just described, but that's in a very small minority. Generally speaking, we have a pretty dysfunctional relationship with it. And we seem to be a split society. We either deny the value of our bodies and the physical world, or we are insatiable with trying to nourish ourselves through material things only, you know, obviously using up enormous resources to do so. We need to, you know, feed our body and soul to feel nourished in a life-sustaining way. So, you know, what I'm saying is we are not one or the other. We are both. You know, this has contributed greatly to the overall situation we have found ourselves in with the health of the planet and ourselves. You know, how we treat and nourish ourselves is how we treat and nourish our world. So the majority of the human race doesn't seem to feel they deserve to be divinely nourished. They feel unworthy. They can't take it in. You know, I think we've been cut off from our Mother Earth so for so many generations that the unconditional love we need as a young child that reflects our worthiness is not able to be given because we are looking to our own mothers for it, and they are cut off as well. So we're all doing the best we can with what we have to work with as a result of feeling cut off.
Thank you very much for that. Oh, absolutely, and puts a lot of things in context, you know, with going back generations. And there's, you know, been pain involved as well in the generations with, you know, expecting or needing things. from parents or grandparents who are themselves, as you say, cut off. Now, in your journey, okay, you've got a great 30-year career as a chef, as a restaurant owner. I mean, you've done this quite a long time in different ways. But along the way, and please share about your career as well, but you experienced an awakening and deepening of understanding the connection between food and, I guess, true nourishment.
Well, I'm a classic wounded healer, and my personal journey has been quite archetypal. You know, when I was born, I had a wound that resulted from my mother miscarrying a twin sister, and it wouldn't heal. So when I was 4 months old, I had surgery, and I was put in a body cast that went from my neck to my ankles for an entire month. And so I wasn't touched. I wasn't held. I couldn't move my body. I was fed intravenously. You know, this is the time when babies are really coming into their bodies. So it obviously was not a very nourishing beginning. And, you know, even though it's impossible to sever the bond with your mother by a cast, it became over time apparent that I believed I was cut off and separated from my mother. You know, it's sort of like how we feel collectively cut off and separated from our Mother Earth. So, you know, I just had a very magnified personal experience of this. So, of course, you know, my journey became, you know, about healing my, you know, my relationship with nourishment. And it goes along with not knowing the oneness that we feel without first knowing the separation. You know, I had to experience severe deprivation of nourishment connected to my physical existence before I could really deeply know that in the cells of my body, the depth of nourishment that exists in this physical world. You know, as a young baby, I just felt cut off from it and didn't really feel like there was much nourishment here for me at all. So, you know, that played a role in my development. And the journey took, you know, many twists and turns and started out on a rather shallow note. And because I carried that belief for many years, actually in my unconscious, that I didn't deserve nourishment, but I was compelled to explore it, I became a chef and nourished everybody else. You know, of course. At least it was a start, and my work with food and cooking was my vehicle for healing, and it kept me grounded in my body. And over the years, it just kept going deeper with it. And, you know, there's, you know, many people, you know, end up with their gifts and, you know, their wisdom as a result of, you know, going down the trail of trying to heal themselves. So that was a big piece for me. And then at one point I had a full-on kundalini explosive awakening, and it lasted about 2 years and took me, boy, for an undescribable ride. And it was a pivotal life-changing experience that revealed my path, my work, calling, journey, and the single most important piece that I know in my bones that really has been the main piece, you know, of bringing divine nourishment, you know, of bringing body and spirit together. And that what I was shown is there is no separation between our body and spirit. It's a continuum. And it's not possible to be separate from spirit when we are in a body. It's self-similar. It's just vibrating at a different frequency. So we are just as much connected with the oneness in this physical world as we are in spirit. It's all right here. And the world in the physical manifestation of the divine and nature, the earth, is a physical manifestation of our divine mother. and she has immense wisdom that is offered as guidance, love, nourishment, everything we need to take this extraordinary journey. You know, she's the unconditional love that we are starved for, that we couldn't get and haven't been able to get because we're all starved for it. So,
now, Mary, in your book, Divine Nourishment, which offers support in reclaiming lost and rejected aspects of ourselves, I mean, the image is so vivid that you just described about your infancy and the fact that keeping you alive intravenously is not the same thing as being nourished. And I think in our culture, there are many things keeping us alive and keeping us going that perhaps are not nourishing to us physically or spiritually. Can you begin to share a little of then what needs to be, what you discovered needs to be reclaimed?
Well, what, you know, first of all, the sacredness of our body. You know, this is, this, what we, I think what has happened over the millennium is that there was a split between body and spirit. And we put more value over one over the other. And so our relationship with our body as a sacred extension of spirit, as a physical manifestation of our spirit, is a very critical piece that we have to reclaim. And, you know, in, if we're going to heal this sense of separation. Another thing that we, and what I've discovered, and, you know, obviously if I was in a body cast and my body wasn't able to move and feel and, you know, all the things that, you know, the sensory exploration that a four-month-old baby would be going through, you know, I might have a sense that I might be cut off from my body. So I had a very visceral experience of that. And on some level, there's been this belief system that there's a split between, okay, this is my spiritual life, this is my spiritual aspect, and this is my body, and they're not connected. So reclaiming that connection between the two so that we are walking a sacred life here in the physical is a very critical piece for us to reclaim so that we can bring a more of a respectful, honoring relationship with this physical world. We would not be entertaining the process and the insanity that this gentleman was talking about in the previous interview. We would not be, you know, considering spending all of our resources on destroying one another and the earth if we saw this as sacred, you know, reclaiming the divine receptive feminine principle is obviously necessary if we are to receive divine life-supporting nourishment. We have to be able to receive it. So what we've also been cut off from the value of those that essential quality of a very, you know, major part of ourselves that doesn't allow us to open up and receive. You know, reclaiming a healthy relationship with our sexuality and bringing it out of a dysfunctional box that's laced with shame and into the realm of co-creation aligned with the divine guidance. You know, that's...
Well, it's interesting... what you said earlier about at some point it seemed to divide. And it's interesting because, for example, if in you go back to, let's say, St. Paul in the old, in the New Testament, who says our body is our temple, It's the temple for our spirit. There seemed to be more of a unified concept, but over time, perhaps it began to be seen that the spirit is timeless and eternal. The body is going to, you know, eventually deteriorate and be cast off somehow. And they began to be valued differently. But reclaiming the temple seems to be what you're speaking of right now.
Well, when you consider that, you know, and this is where food really plays an important role. When you consider that, you know, there's a reason that we decide to come into a physical body and a physical world, to have a human journey. It supports our soul to grow. And food literally is like, it's a continuum. Once, you know, everything in all the elemental forces, the dirt in the earth, the sun, the moon, the sky, the air, the water, everything comes into play to create that. And then everything becomes food for another. And so being at the top of the food chain, it's like we are connected to everything, everything. And even though our body lets go and dies off at some point, and that's part of our human journey and transformation, but the value of coming here, being in a physical body, living in this physical realm, learning and growing and transforming, is invaluable to our spirit.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And now when you mention the sunlight and all these things that go into it, we're also talking about seasons.
We are talking about seasons.
As well. Now, how does living and eating seasonally, how does that become a roadmap for physical and spiritual health?
Well, I equate it to, let's just kind of bring this down to on maybe on a little personal level.
Yeah.
Would you agree that we all have an inner child?
Yes.
And when that child has any trauma or does not get the value of its true nature reflected back to it, or it has to abandon certain essential qualities of itself in order to survive in its environment, it will split off and quit growing. And it keeps us from fully becoming an adult. And I have students work with this inner mother-child relationship to strengthen it. You know, it's like we become lost children longing for this unconditional mother love that, like I said previously, is difficult to get from people who are also struggling and longing for the same unconditional mother love. So our world is in the condition of an adolescent's bedroom who has no self-esteem. It doesn't feel like, as a collective culture, we have been behaving like children. I mean, we've been behaving like children who don't feel loved. And now our Mother Earth is, you know, it's like she is telling us now, it's time to grow up and clean up our room or else. And, you know, our Mother Earth has a consciousness, and she reflects that consciousness to us and guides us in how to live, grow, transform, die, live in harmony with one another. You know, and you have to slow down and quit running scared to be able to watch and listen to what she's sharing. She is the mother that is teaching us through experiences in this physical human journey. And her creative life force energy runs through her body and shifts energetically from season to season. And we are a part of her. We are a part of all aspects of her. We literally take that into our body. And these seasons are lined up over the course of a yearly cycle, literally becoming a map for transformation because of the alignment of the energetic shifts and twists and turns of this wave that we are riding. So in order to grow and evolve, you have to let go of the old, give birth to the new over and over again, just like she does. I mean, we're doing the same thing as we grow and evolve spiritually that she's doing physically year after year after year. And she's showing us how to do that. She's holding us, feeding us on every possible level. She is teaching us, guiding us to grow and evolve. We have that unconditional mother love, but we have lost sight of it. We can't feel it. And like children convinced ourselves, the reason we don't get it is because we don't deserve it. That's what happens when young children are not getting their needs met. They develop a belief that they don't deserve it. It must be their fault. So we are like scared children running around feeling unworthy of it, and, you know, and we have been, you know, anyway, and we're treating the world around us as if we are those children that feel unloved and unworthy of it. So just like building and strengthening the mother-child relationship within us, we have to, so that inner child can grow up and integrate. There's, you know, we have to strengthen and build that relationship with our Mother Earth as well. And what we would find is, in if we look to that relationship as the unconditional mother relationship, mother-child relationship that we have all been longing for, we would get our needs met. And then we would, I mean, this state of this sense of disconnection has put us in, it's made it impossible to be conscious adult stewards of our world and hold it as sacred. I mean, our relationship with food is a doorway, an important piece to reclaiming this relationship with our mother. I mean, it connects us with her literally. And in its natural state, embodies her consciousness. So when you eat it seasonally from your environment, it embodies the energetic qualities of that aspect of the map of transformation. It's like riding a wave. And you have to ride the entire wave, not skipping over or jumping off, to get the benefit of the potential transformation that's available for us. So she is in constant flow and change. And when we're aligned with this flow, we are in the current of it. And when we trust and are open to embracing the ride, there's enormous support to grow, evolve, and transform. When we feel loved unconditionally, we can trust who is holding us. And, you know, the ancient Taoists were able to astutely observe and articulate her language and what she is offering as guidance and how to live physically, emotionally, spiritually, right here in our world. And she doesn't separate it out. In other words, our mother, our true mother, sees us as divine beings, not in spite of being human, but because we are human. She is the one reflecting that back to us. And isn't that what we're all longing for?
Yes. Yes, thank you, Mary. And it's interesting that on this day, the 10th anniversary of 9/11, which I'd like to acknowledge, this collective culture that you mention, living as an adolescent with low self-esteem, trying to find the way, raises a lot of emotions for many people. I would just like to share this reflection today from the book, Dear Little One, Thoughts to My Child in an Uncertain World. It's called An Uncertain World, and it goes like this. Life is so very precious and can change in the blink of an eye. There is no certainty. We walk the world in sure strides, confident of our environment and the ground beneath our feet, unaware of the true nature of concrete and shoes and earth. Their subatomic dance tells another story, one of impermanence, of tendencies to exist and not to exist, of waves of probability, of chance. Our presence on this little planet, in our particular time and place, is a real miracle. Whatever happens in the world, keep doing the things you love to do, the things you are called to do, through even our smallest dreams, we let God's kingdom shine through. You are listening to the Godspeed Institute live on the Progressive Radio Network. After the break, we'll continue our conversation on food and spirituality with Mary Lane, professional chef and author of the book Divine Nourishment. I'd like to send out this little musical piece to the memory of my father. He loved Tony Bennett. Stay with us.
If I rule the world, every day would be the first day of spring. Every heart would have a new song to sing, and we'd sing of the joy every morning would bring. If I rule the world, every man would be as free as a bird. Every voice would be a voice to be heard. Take my word, we would treasure each day that occurred. My world would be a beautiful place where we would weave such wonderful dreams. My world would wear a smile on its face, like the man in the moon has when the moon beams. If I rule the world, every man would say the world his friend. There'd be happiness that no man could end. Oh, my friend, not if I rule the world.
Welcome back to the Godspeed Institute, live on the Progressive Radio Network. We're talking with Mary Lane, professional chef and author of the book Divine Nourishment. Luciano Pavarotti, the opera singer, once said, one of the very nicest things about life is the way we must regularly stop whatever it is we're doing and devote our attention to eating. And in this part of the program, I'd like to focus a little more on the practical applications of your work, Mary, because I think that's very important when he says devote our attention, that food can be sacred as well, and therefore a form of devotion we pay attention to.
Yes, it's perfect because it makes us stop in a very almost, mundane daily act of connecting with our mother. And we need that. You know, we really do need that. So this is a huge topic of, you know, living and eating seasonally, and it can get overwhelming because it's so vast and all of the implications of it. So I try to, you know, get people to just ground it and, you know, bring it down to the plate, if nothing else. Bring it into your daily life and just with the knowing that it reverberates out to a very big picture that has huge implications. And in our just daily life and daily practice in eating consciously, you know, with the honor and respect for the plants and the animals and the earth and our bodies and all that goes into feeding us.
Now, when you say start with your plate, let's, for example, take into account seasonally, that is, I'm living in coastal Maine and you are in Hawaii right now. So how do we apply this to our plate?
Well, we apply it according to the environment that we're living in, literally. So the foods that you eat, because you have different varying degrees of seasons that I do. I mean, even though I'm in Hawaii, and I just moved back a week ago, so even though I'm in Hawaii, there's definite seasons. And the food that comes out at the different seasons over the course of the year ground me where I'm living, just like it does for you. So that somewhat eliminates shipping food from all over the world and not eating raw tomatoes in the middle of winter when it doesn't serve you because it came from the southern hemisphere. So when
now, can you share a little bit about why, you know, the collective culture should not be doing that? What's the downside?
Well, the downside is there's many levels to the downside. First of all, just on one practical level, we're obviously using up a lot of resources to ship food all over the world. On another level, you know, the food is not as healthy for us. On an even other level, energetic level, the foods that are grown in your environment and eaten at the time that they are either come into season or are prepared in a way that they're energetically compatible with the season. Let's say you get a big harvest of tomatoes in the summer and they're wonderful to eat raw in the summer, and they energetically match the summer season, and you are in the summer season, so your body is in energetically aligned with that, so it's a match. In the winter, you need warming foods. You go deeper into your being energetically. It's a time to go inward, more reflection, more, you know, it's the trough of the wave. And so you want foods that will energetically align with that. So let's say you cook your tomatoes, your raw tomatoes that you got from the farmer's market or your garden, and you cook it into a tomato sauce. That takes those fresh tomatoes into a form and an energetic quality that will go deeper into your body so you can stay aligned with the season. It's like surfing, you know, and you want to be in the sweet spot on that surfboard. You want to ride that wave. So you're at the trough of the wave. You don't want to be eating foods that are energetically aligned with the peak of the wave. Does that make sense?
Right. Yes, and, you know, it's interesting because we know historically, you know, when we explore our history here, for example, in Maine, which can have a winter that lasts 5 months, that people relied so much more in the old days on the canning and the storing and for that time. And now, you know, so that would be a lot of grains, a lot of fruits, vegetables, jams, jellies, things that were stored or canned. Yes, and now, of course, with the ease of going to the big, you know, super grocery stores down the street, the food eaten during wintertime is different, and of course that relates to the amount of energy you're expending as well. So, you know, there are probably great effects also on weight gain, things that are not appropriate, you know, for the time, as you say, when we are, it's a time of going inward. And almost like a hollowing out, as in when we talk about Advent or, you know, what's leading up to Christmas, it's a kind of hollowing out time, like the bears in the caves that are also in the area. Here. So we're not mimicking nature that way.
We're not mimicking nature, and that's one reason why we're feeling disconnected from it. You know, nature has a map, and it's masterfully designed for every environment that you're living in. So to feel connected to her, you have to be eating the food she's putting out at that time, or at least it's from that area. And I have a theory that the food addictions, the addiction to sugar, the the obesity, it's a result of feeling disconnected. It's a result of eating foods from different hemispheres and grown all over the place and out of season. You know, we're not separate, and our bodies are made up of what we eat. And so if we're eating completely out of alignment with the very environment that we're living in, how can we feel connected?
Mm-hmm.
And then that affects our emotional state, our mental state. It's very scary to be walking through a world that you don't feel connected to.
Yes, really cut off from, as you say, or kind of almost in denial of, you know.
So how can we relax and slow down and be able to listen to her and to feel the guidance and all of that? It's almost like we're in fight or flight mode, and we're speeding up more and more because of this lack of connection.
Hmm. Now, I was going to ask you, along your journey then, as you were awakening to this and figuring this out in your work as a chef, how did you apply this in your work? How did that blossom?
Well, first, I didn't really know where I was going with this. You know, I went to San Francisco and went to the chef, you know, Culinary Academy and learned to be a chef, and I was really excited about that. And as time went on, over 30 years, you kind of do it all. Otherwise, you can't keep your interest. You know, you have to keep going deeper with it. And so I just kept going deeper with it. You know, at some point, okay, I can't just cook for the art of it. I have to bring in some health aspects. And then at some point, you know, I went into the schooling of the five element nutrition, and that is what opened the door to this whole relationship, you know, with, wait a minute, you know, I need to align with nature here. And that actually was just theory for me, concept, until right out of school. It was 2 years of school in San Francisco. I ended up on top of a mountain in North Carolina, and I had the reference point, you know, it's fresh out of school, but I ended up on this mountain, and I did a lot of just walking the mountain over a year and a half period of apprenticing this old wise woman of gathering wild food and medicine, and I got really quiet, you know, and that's when it became real for me. It's like it went out of the realm of theory and concept, and I started seeing how I was integrated and how which nature was doing was reflected in, you know, within me, and what the foods were doing for me. So that became a pivotal point for me. And so then I started really dropping deeper into, okay, the, you know, the local foods, and then the wild foods, you know, that are growing totally undomesticated, because I wanted to tap into that wild side of myself, you know, that's undomesticated, that's free from all the conditioning. And I went, oh my goodness, you know, I want to eat foods that they're wild too.
I want to
tap into that part of me, you know. And and what it also did is, as a woman living in a society that you know, has not reflected very valuing, you know, hasn't had a very valuable reflection, you know, as the quality, essential qualities of me as a woman, as the of the qualities the feminine brings to the table. And mm-hmm. so that started entering into my work, as, you know, I every time I would look to this society as a, for a reflection of my value as a woman, I didn't feel very good about myself. So I started looking towards nature and started witnessing, oh, she's wild and she's vast and she embodies it all, and, you know, and it actually has been the teacher for me to start reclaiming all these aspects of myself that mm-hmm. we have kind of shunned, you know. Well, you know, I am her, and she gets away with it. Why can't I? And
oh, that's great. Mary, can I ask you to share a little more of what the Taoist five-element system is of nutrition? What are those elements?
Well, they take into consideration all the elemental forces of the earth, you know, water, the fire, the air, in the five elements, it's, you know, it's the water, it's the wood element, it's the fire element, it's the metal element, and it's all of these five elements, and so they are connected to everything. And in this system, what they've done is they've connected the dots. So it's like the foods that you eat support different organ systems. The organ systems are connected to the elements. The elements are connected to the seasons. The seasons and elements are connected to emotions that are part of us, that move through us, that make us alive and human. These emotions are connected to the mental, the consciousness, our spiritual journey. And so it's like it's all woven in a continuum, and it's all connected and reflected through nature. So when we are supporting ourselves and supporting our bodies to and nourishing our bodies, what we learn and is that when we do this in a kind of a balanced way, that in a way that we can ride this wave, and as it shifts and turns and is able to go through the different aspects of our human journey that supports us to transform, the food grounds us on that, but it also is supporting and connecting the dots with all the other aspects of ourselves. So it's very holistic, and you're not supporting one part of yourself in one way and another part of yourself in another way. It's a continuum. And that's what I love about it. And it's a reference point. It's not like I'm advocating everyone be a Taoist, but what they did was they were able to sit, be still, articulate, and connect the dots. And so that it keeps us from separating ourselves out, we are nourishing all aspects of ourselves, and then following the guidance of our mother in growing and evolving. And everything that we do, including the very mundane act of eating lunch, supports it when we connect those dots. That's what I love about it.
Now, Mary, can you give an example for, in terms of a particular food that supports a certain or nutrition, a certain organ, and then how that extends out to the elements and seasons? Because a lot of us have heard things that might be considered wives' tales, like the beets that support the uterus, but maybe there is truth in this.
Or there is truth in this. And, let's say, seaweed comes from the ocean. And I'm at the ocean, so I'm going to bring that up right now.
Okay.
And we're surrounded by the ocean. Seaweed comes from the ocean. It's of the water element. It has a salty flavor. And our organ system that's connected to the water element is our kidneys and our bladder. It's the yin and yang, your kidney yin, bladder yang. The salty flavor travels through the meridians particularly well and really nourishes the kidneys and the bladder. And it's part of the water element. Now, that is also part, that relates to the winter season. And notice the ocean has depth to it. Seaweed lives under the ocean. It's got depth to it. Winter is the time where it's the trough of the wave. It's the time of the season that we want to, like I said, slow down some, be more reflective. It's letting things die off that no longer serve us. It's a time to go in and go and gestate the seeds that we want to give birth to in the spring. So let's say we eat this seaweed as part of our diet, it supports us to nourish that organ system. Well, that organ system also supports an emotional state where when it deals with our level of fear and our level of awe of the world. It deals with our ability to flow with the life, to be fluid. It deals with our ability to be able to be still and drop in. And so when, we need to nourish this organ system all year long, but in the winter in particularly, we want to really build that organ system so that it's strong and it can support us throughout the course of the year. It builds our life force. That's the time the kidneys are like the seat of our life force energy, our sexual creative life force energy. So if we don't take time out to build that, and if we're not nourishing that organ system, we could have a tendency to be having an exaggerated relationship with fear. It could get out of control, and then that keeps us from being able to rest, and that keeps us moving fast. That keeps us from being able to drop in. And look at, well, wait a minute, this doesn't serve me anymore. I need to let that go so I can give birth to a new aspect of myself or a new project. Or when the energy is rising in the spring, she's giving birth, the earth is giving birth. We want to be giving birth. So, and naturally in the spring, these young greens that come sprouting up are the perfect foods for our liver, our gallbladder, which relate to the spring season and the wood element. So it's all lined up. It's like one leads to the other. And so the foods that line up with that just supports it all. And so what the flavors of the foods are salty, sour, bitter, sweet, and pungent. If people did nothing else but put these flavors of foods in their diet, and they ate seasonally and they ate locally as much as possible, this would be contributing to the vastness of what I've been sharing. Mm-hmm. But it all comes down to just simple little, it's like natural, you know, it's like, you don't even have to think about it after a while. It's just in our nature. We have this wisdom in us. And that would support us. That would support us. Does that explain it well enough? Does that explain it?
Oh, yes. Thank you so much. As we come towards the end of the program, I wanted to ask if you had any other books or projects in the works you'd like to share about briefly.
Well, like I said, I just moved home to Hawaii a week ago. You know, nature is my teacher, and so I want to work with Pele, the creatress, to support me to write this next book on, it's a continuum from the Divine Nourishment book on how all of this relates to having a healthy relationship with our sexuality. So that's going to be my next book. And then I teamed up with a dear, delightful friend of mine, Dr. Alvita Soleil, and we are going to do women's retreats here in Hawaii that brings in, reclaims this level of wisdom in a very experiential, playful way connected to the energy here in Hawaii.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, it's very exciting to be able to bring this into this form at this time.
And Mary, if people want to learn more about your work, where can they go?
Well, if they can go to my website. I have a website. It's divinenourishment.net. And my book is sold through my website. It's also links to, you know, Amazon.com. It's available in paperback and ebook and Kindle. It's, you know, I have a schedule of my teleconference classes and retreats on my website. You know, I teach teleconference classes for women that can't travel, and it's a very affordable way to offer support, so I do that. And you know, my book is also available in independent bookstores and Barnes and Nobles, and so it's very available. And I have a schedule of all the things that I'm currently doing, and I just keep updating that on my website, divinenourishment.net.
Well, thank you very much, Mary, for being on the program. It's been a great conversation, and I just want to thank you again.
Thank you, Carol. I so appreciate being able to share this. Thank you for allowing me.
Very good. Now, before we close, here is a Godspeed bit to add to your spiritual tool belt that you wrap around yourself every day. Bless your food. Don't forget, whatever your tradition, the moment it takes really helps to create an instant connection between the energy that is you and the energy you're about to consume. I like to say, bless this food to the nourishment of my body and soul. Let me take what I need and leave the rest. Does that work for you? And perhaps, even if you're not a believer in a divine entity, at the core of every grace is gratitude, which is essential to happiness and growth. So, you may say, we give thanks to those who have prepared this meal on this bountiful day with a tableful
of good friends and family like you. So thank you, listeners, for joining us for the Godspeed Institute today. This show was recorded live on the Progressive Radio Network in New York City and was produced by Michael Hallenbeck. If you'd like to hear this or any of our previous programs again, or send it to someone, simply go to GodspeedInstitute.com. Please send your comments to contact@GodspeedInstitute.com. We love to hear from you. Join us again as we continue to explore all the world's religions and spiritual belief systems. And until then, we wish you Godspeed.